Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Let's dive down a little on one of Governor Cuomo's proposals to address the New York State fiscal crisis and the crisis facing local governments and school districts around the state. He has appointed a committee to find ways to cut unfunded mandates. Those are rules and regulations that the state imposes on school districts and local governments without paying for them. The goal is to lift unfunded mandates where the state can to help achieve the property tax cap that the governor wants. Mayors are warning that health and pension benefits alone will soon eat up every dollar of property tax revenue without some real relief. Here's about 25 seconds of Governor Cuomo from his State of the State.
We'll use the same approach when it comes to mandate relief, putting together a group that will start January 7th and will commit to have actions by the April 1 deadline and will propose eliminating any unnecessary state mandates. Again, we'll include all our partners, legislative, executive, and stakeholders, labor groups, and that group will be run by Larry Schwartz, who's now senior advisor to me, but many of you worked with him when he was secretary to Governor Patterson.
With us now, Carol Kellerman, a member of the governor's mandate relief redesign team. She is also president of the Citizens Budget Commission, a fiscal watchdog think tank, and Peter Baines, executive director of the New York State Conference of Mayors. Thanks to both of you for coming on WNYC today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Peter, is this about a whole list of little rules and regulations that cost cities money, what we usually think of when the phrase unfunded mandates is used? Or is this about public employee health and pension benefits and the rest is nickels and dimes?
I think it's the latter, Brian. You know, there is a long laundry list of state mandates that we've put together, each of which impose costs on local governments and on taxpayers. But if we're going to finally address the property tax cap problem or property tax problem in New York, and if it's going to be done in conjunction with a property tax cap, we have to attack the big drivers of costs at the local level, and that's employee benefits. And those are the primary recommendations we're making to the governor.
And I read some of your recommendations and some of the Conference of Mayors report on this. Give our listeners a scope of how you see the severity of that problem.
Well, as you alluded to in your introduction, as of right now, for cities upstate outside of the 61 cities outside of New York City, two-thirds of the property taxes they collect go to two expenses: pension costs and health insurance. At the rate they are growing, pension costs and health insurance, which are largely out of the control of local governments and mayors, if they continue to rise, as they undoubtedly will for the next 3 years, that in conjunction with a 2% property tax cap would mean that in 3 years, in 2014, every single penny of property taxes collected in those cities would just go to pay for pension costs and health insurance. So we think that starkly portrays the dangerous problem facing New York's local governments and taxpayers and why those two cost drivers, pensions and health insurance, have to be addressed immediately.
Is it much less dire, by the way, for New York City?
Well, New York City has additional revenue sources in addition to the property tax. So, if you put that chart together for New York City, if you juxtapose those costs against their property taxes, it may not make the problem look as dangerous, but their costs are rising just as rapidly. As Mayor Bloomberg last week highlighted, you know, pensions are the number one problem his administration mm-hmm. will be trying to address this year. So for New York City, yes, health insurance and pensions are devouring their budget just as much as cities upstate.
So, Carol Kellerman, you're on the Governor's Mandate Relief Commission. Do you line up with the mayors on what this is really about?
Well, Peter is right that pensions and other fringe benefits are a tremendous cost for localities, and that it's important to try to get control of them, and the pensions are determined by the state legislature. So it's like, you know, taking someone out for dinner on someone else's credit card. The legislature imposes a variety of sweeteners and the terms of the pensions, and then the localities, including New York City, are expected to cover the cost. So that is a very large unfunded mandate. Health insurance is not. Health insurance is something that is collectively bargained, and part of, I think, the governor's intent in imposing a property tax cap is to put more pressure on localities to bargain more effectively and get more of a contribution from employees for health insurance. But this is an opportunity to deal with other unfunded mandates as well. They're not necessarily nickels and dimes. First of all, lots of little things add up to a large amount of money. Second of all, there are some other very large expenditures, particularly for school districts, that have a tremendous number of requirements imposed by the state, both through regulation and legislation, particularly in the area of special education. And that is a rapidly growing area of expense for school districts, where there are a number of mandates imposed. The State Education Department has put out a list of 204 mandates that are imposed in the special education area beyond what the federal
government requires. So can you give me an example or two of ones that you think are both expensive and unnecessary?
Well, the state specifies everyone who must be on the team that determines an individualized education plan for a student that is going to receive special services. And it says that an outside parent must be on this team, a psychologist must be on the team. It should be easier for a local school district to make the determination of what staff they need on these teams. The plans then specify exactly the class size for the student. Again, we should give school districts flexibility to make these decisions in the interest of the students and have a process for people to appeal if they're not done properly, but give school districts the ability to do these things without having to keep a whole bunch of people on staff just to conform to these requirements. There are 35,000 employees in New York State working on special education. That's a lot of people. We can probably streamline that if we go through some of these 200-plus rules and try to eliminate some of them. So I think that's another thing that the team will be looking at.
Now, listeners, we can take your examples of unfunded mandates. Anybody want to feed Carol Kellerman, who is a member of the governor's mandate relief redesign team? Maybe you work for a local government or a school system, or maybe you're a business owner who sees an unfunded mandate. I realize we're talking most specifically about local governments and school districts here, but anybody can be affected by an unfunded mandate down the road. So give us a call if you want to add anything into this discussion or ask our guests any questions about how this connects with the proposed 2% a year cap on property tax increases from Governor Cuomo or anything else. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Again, my guests, Peter Baines, Executive Director of the New York State Conference of Mayors, and Carol Kellerman, a member of the Governor's Mandate Relief Redesign Team. She's president of the Citizens Budget Commission, the fiscal watchdog think tank. Peter, in today's New York Times, there's a report on a surprising coalition, as they frame it, pushing back against the Cuomo property tax cap proposal, which, of course, is intended to limit property tax increases to 2% a year. And it's extremely popular, according to the poll that they refer to, with 83% of New Yorkers approving of such a property tax increase cap. But the Times says the coalition against it includes the teachers' union and anti-tax groups, who are not usually aligned, and some localities and school districts, all of whom think it's a sham or won't work. Does the Conference of Mayors have a role in that coalition?
No, we do not. You know, we We put together, we are sort of an ongoing coalition of mayors across the state. We created a task force of mayors, Republican, Democrats, upstate, downstate, cities, villages, to put our recommendations together that we released in December. We're working with other associations in Albany representing schools and municipalities, the business groups. We haven't said that the 2% tax cap is good or bad. What we have said is if it's going to be the vehicle to attempt to have property tax relief in New York, it has to be done in conjunction with or be preceded by the mandate relief items that we're talking about. There's just the numbers do not add up otherwise. There will be devastation in communities in terms of the services provided, the employment within municipalities that is already way down. It would have to be decimated even further. So we think a tax cap can work if it's done right, and we think we've put out a roadmap to get New York to that place.
Do you agree with Carol that one of the reasons for the 2% increase cap is to put pressure on the mayors themselves? She said it's one thing with pensions where the legislature is in control and places that mandate on you, but also to impose more fiscal discipline on the cities themselves and the school districts themselves when it comes to negotiating the health benefits in the collective bargaining agreements with public employees.
Well, I agree with Carol that is the approach of some and the view of some. That my problem with that approach is that even though on paper municipalities have control over health insurance because they can negotiate it, you have to look at the underlying restrictions on local governments as employers that does not allow them to negotiate fairly with the unions. First thing I'll cite is the Triborough Amendment, which I know Carol knows about. Maybe you've heard about, Brian. Mm-hmm. It's a law in New York that basically creates virtual contracts. That is, when a municipal or school district contract with its employees expires, it continues on. The key provisions of the contract continue on even though a new contract hasn't been negotiated. So what that does is it just discourages the unions from coming to the table to negotiate. So
you want to repeal the Triborough Amendment?
We'd like to see that repealed. We think if that was repealed, if you reformed binding arbitration, which is a process in New York that applies to police and fire unions, to take ability to pay into account. If you reformed in those two things, binding arbitration, Triborough Amendment, that would level the negotiating mm-hmm. playing field. And then I think Carol is right. Then the pressure of the tax cap would allow mayors to get the kind of concessions on health insurance that they've been trying to receive for years.
The Triborough Amendment, recently renamed the Robert F. Kennedy Amendment. No, I'm kidding. But Carol, what about his point, especially on the ability to pay in binding arbitration? If a locality has to go to arbitration with its public employees and the arbitrator is not supposed to take into account the ability to pay by law, but rather just what they think is right and fair, is that one way that you think the city should liberate the localities?
Well,
the state should liberate them?
As I understand the Triborough Amendment, the arbitrator is required to take into account ability to pay. The problem is, what's the definition? And, what can the arbitrator say about ability to pay? And can they just decide that, oh, well, they can cut something else? That's another thing to think about doing. If you can't completely repeal the amendment, to actually put some specific standards and definitions in for what the arbitrator has to do to make a finding that the locality has an ability to pay. And that's another way to adjust the amendment, if not completely repeal it, that would help. All of these things, again, as Peter says, are the big picture items that have got us into this situation where localities feel that they are constrained by a lot of state rules and laws, and that this inhibits them in their ability to bargain. Of course, with respect to the Triborough Amendment, the unions would say that they got
Whoops, did we lose Carol? I think we just lost Carol's line. So,
Brian,
we will get her back.
Can you hear me?
Actually, okay. Carol, go ahead and finish your answer.
Can you
Sorry.
Hear me?
Yes. Can you hear
okay.
us?
Yes, yes, I can.
I don't know what happened, but you're back.
Okay. What I was going to say is that the unions will contend that they got the Triborough Amendment in exchange for giving up the right to strike, and that that's an
Whoops, we lost her again. All right, let me reset. And I want to get a couple. We have great calls coming in, and we have very limited time left. So I want to get at least two callers.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we have you back. I don't know what keeps happening. But Carol Kellerman from the Citizens Budget Commission, who is a member of Governor Cuomo's mandate relief redesign team designed to reduce unfunded mandates, and Peter Baines, executive director of the New York State Conference of Mayors. And Mark in Westchester has some experience sitting on a school board, right, Mark?
Yes, thank you. I was on a school board in a so-called, you know, high-performing district here in Westchester. And and it's true for many of these districts in this category, receive a very, very small percentage of our overall budget from state funds. It's about 5%. So 95% of what's expended on education is raised locally. But yet the mandates from the state are onerous and increasing year by year. So our proposal and a number of other districts to our state legislators was to eliminate. We would give up all state funding in its entirety in exchange for mandate relief.
Hmm. Now, that's, you said, in a high-performing district, so I presume that's a very wealthy part of Westchester?
Well, again, you know, to call it wealthy, I think, is always, you know, everybody jumps on that. But, you know, given the court case, the major court case, which talked about, you know, lack of funding for New York City, and yet, you know, about 55% of the city budget comes from the state versus 5% for a district like, you know, I represented. But nevertheless, we were willing to give that up in exchange for mandate
right.
relief.
So, Mark, thank you. I don't know where he's from, Peter Baines. You know, maybe that would be a good deal for Scarsdale and not such a good deal for Utica. But do you think mayors are at that point around the state? Just give up state funding in exchange for taking all the state mandates off?
There is not one mayor in the state of New York, I don't think, that would make that proposition. First of all,
that wouldn't work out very well for Yonkers, wouldn't it?
It wouldn't work out for any city. They're too dependent on that aid and over dependent on property tax. It's the spending side of things that has to be addressed before you can get at property taxes. Is the bottom line.
Another caller from Westchester, Malcolm. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, I was part of a school-based support team, but here's what I want to say. I think if the districts were able to keep their autonomy but do something that's called functional consolidation, in other words, they could hire experts, professional people, backroom people who could work for numbers of districts. And let me just give one example in Mamaroneck. With the lack of expertise, they were paying a computer person who was living in Greece. Recently, they paid the insurance for three people who are now deceased. So because of the lack of expertise on some of these local districts, keep their autonomy, but have functions of people who are more knowledgeable, more professional, work with the districts. I just want to give one quick example. It's not this, but in Fairfield, in Virginia, mm-hmm. the district is the county. I'm not saying that. The districts need to keep their autonomy, but what they really need to do is have expertise across the board of different districts so they can function together on things that need to be done to get more expertise, more professionals. And I think that would save and be more efficient and save a lot of money.
Malcolm, thank you very much. We're going to run out of time in a minute, but Carol Kellerman, you know, maybe the most provocative and least discussed proposal from the Carl Paladino campaign was to abolish all local governments mm-hmm. and consolidate all local governance at the county level.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be the counties, but there wouldn't be City of White Plains or Mamaroneck or whatever. So that's much further than Malcolm was proposing to go. But does your Commission on Unfunded Mandate Relief have to get involved in this question of controversial consolidation?
I don't think so, because consolidation, or there's no mandate that there be 700 school districts, for example. And I think the governor would be in favor of consolidation of local governments wherever possible. In fact, when he was attorney general, he sponsored legislation that was passed to do that, but it's optional. And as the caller said, he's absolutely right that we could consolidate, particularly at the school district level, a lot of administrative functions. You have some tiny school districts next to larger ones, and they could use the same transportation systems, back office, computer technology, as well as share specialists in various pedagogical areas. But notice that he kept saying they must maintain their autonomy. And I think that that's an issue that people struggle with, particularly in the area of education, is that we have this national tradition of locally directed schools. And people are very reluctant to give that up. But we may be coming to a point where financially it just doesn't make sense to have all of these different administrative units, and we've got to start consolidating.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. A lot on the table. One of the important conversations that the Cuomo administration has launched in New York State with the Mandate Relief Redesign Team, expected to report sometime between now and April 1st. Do you have a date, by the way?
March 1.
So with a month to go before the budget has to be sealed under the law, but a month after the governor proposes his budget. So it's going to be very interesting to see what you come up with, along with your colleagues, Carol Kellerman, a member of the governor's Mandate Relief Redesign Team and president of the Citizens Budget Commission, and Peter Baines, executive director of the New York State Conference of Mayors. We look forward to following up with you both.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Al Jazeera's big scoop today, making lots of news around the world, on Palestinian Authority negotiating documents. Somebody leaked 10 years of Palestinian Authority negotiating documents in the Israeli-Palestinian peace process, and Al Jazeera is reporting them. We will speak with Rami Khoury coming up in just a minute, who is reviewing some of these documents for Al Jazeera, and we'll look at what it means for Middle East peace. Stay tuned.